Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm Mike Canary. This Thursday, January 24th, the Florida Gulf Coast University's Libertarian Philosophy Club, Eagles for Liberty, is hosting a presentation called Islam Without Extremes, a Muslim Case for Freedom and Tolerance by Turkish writer and journalist Mustafa Akyol. He's a senior fellow on Islam and modernity at the Cato Institute and an opinion writer for the New York Times. The lecture is presented in partnership with FGCU's Multicultural Leadership Development Center and the Honors College. Akyol is author of Islam Without Extremes, A Muslim Case for Liberty, and The Islamic Jesus. He's a regular opinion columnist for several Turkish publications, and his TEDx talk, Faith Versus Tradition, has been viewed online more than a million times. We thought we'd get a bit of a preview of his talk today, so we have him brought him on the show. Mustafa Akyol, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thank you for your time today.
Thanks so much for having me. It's a pleasure to talk, and of course, thanks to the Florida Gulf Coast University for inviting me.
All right. Well, we only have about 15 minutes in this segment, but if you'd like to join our conversation and ask a question or make a comment, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. On Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So for starters, can you give us a sense of what your talk is going to cover on Thursday? You sent me a bit of an overview, so I guess start with the story of the Saudi woman who was delayed during her stop in Thailand on her way to Australia.
Sure. I mean, her name is Rahaf, and she really was the attention of a worldwide controversy, rightly so. I mean, she's from a Saudi family. She went to Kuwait with her family, but the family apparently abused her because she let her faith in Islam go, and she abandoned Islam or renounced Islam, as she said. And then she fled her family. She fled from Kuwait, got on a plane. She wanted to go to Australia, but she was stopped there by a Saudi diplomat. And finally, she got asylum in Canada. But this was yet another incident hinting that in the Islamic world today, not everywhere, but in certain countries, we need to speak honestly about the issue of individual freedom and the religious tradition. Because Islam is used to oppress women or minorities or dissidents or people who are blamed as apostates or blasphemers. Although these things should be, you know, considered as individual choice and a matter of individual freedom. Not every Muslim agrees with these authoritarian laws, so, you know, there's a controversy that's going on. But we need an honest conversation whether they are really a part of Islam, the core of religion, or whether there are some medieval interpretations that now we have to question.
You know, you said, I found it very interesting at the end of the thing that you sent me, you said that there's basically two sides to this coin that are keeping that honest conversation from happening. There, on the left, there's a fear of criticizing Islam because you will be perceived as Islamophobic even if your criticism is accurate. And on the right, there might be a tendency to take the criticisms that you would find and use them to amplify Islamophobia. Can you kind of flesh that out?
Sure. Thanks for pointing it out. I mean, I see that kind of dichotomy in the U.S. I mean, I certainly see some voices that are typically on the politically right side of the spectrum who say, oh, Islam is a dangerous religion. It's you know, creates terrorists and we should keep Islam away. They look at every Muslim suspiciously. You know, it leads to bans on Sharia in Oklahoma in the middle of the country where nobody thinks of Sharia. So there is a kind of exaggerated fear of Islam, which leads to or calls for authoritarian measures against Muslims, and I'm totally against that. But on the other hand, to say that, oh, there's a problem with Islam in the modern world today, all interpretations of Islam are by definition, you know, compatible with a free, open society, with liberalism, with human rights, that is not fair either. And I'm a Muslim. I'm proud of my faith. I'm proud of the core of my faith, the Quran and the Prophet's experience. But I do see that there are layers and layers of interpretation built in the Middle Ages at a time when there was little notion of equality of the sexes or human rights or free speech. And those interpretations are held by certain authorities in many Muslim-majority countries with different levels. Of course, Saudi Arabia is much more oppressive than, let's say, somewhere in the middle of the spectrum, like Pakistan, relatively speaking. But that we have to be able to speak about these things. And one thing I reminded that Christianity had similar questions too. I mean, there was a time that Christians thought heretics should be burned at the stake. I mean, that was a few centuries ago, but that problem was solved by thinking about human rights, by thinking about freedom, and by arguing against certain interpretations of Christianity that was authoritarian, that was illiberal. And the same thing is happening in Islam today, and it should happen more. That's my argument.
Can you talk some about what you call Islamic, or what is called Islamic modernism, sort of the arc from where it rose to where we are today? Is that too big a question for a shorter answer?
No, for sure. I mean, that's a broad term that scholars who study the Muslim world have tossed. And it means that since the late 19th century, there have been intellectuals, scholars in the Muslim world, in the Ottoman Empire, in the Arab world, in Pakistan, and elsewhere, who said that, well, there are great things in the West, like democracy, individual freedom, rule of law, equality before the law. These are great ideas. And actually, Islam should be compatible with these ideas too, but we have a problem in our hand. We have to reinterpret our tradition. And in Egypt, there was Muhammad Abduh, who was one of the pioneers. In the Ottoman Empire, it was Mahmud Kemal. And they pushed for reform, and some reforms took place. But then came another era in the Muslim world. It was the era of colonialism, so anti-Western resistance was the norm, and these liberal ideas were trashed out. Then another wave came that we call Islamism, which is a combination of Orthodox Islam with some more authoritarian political models. So we lost that current called Islamic modernism broadly. So I'm one of the people who's trying to revive that, because I think that is exactly what we need. By that I mean faith in the roots of the religion, but also critical take on the interpretations of that religion, which took place at a certain time, which doesn't reflect the values of our modern world today.
You know, I found it really interesting that your TED Talk, which came out 8 years ago, which, you know, is not that long ago, ends with how Turkey has resisted that trend and can sort of be seen as a success story, but a lot has changed since then. Can you reflect on that change?
Oh, yes. I mean, in this story, there are a lot of disappointments, I must say. And my country, Turkey, has not been very encouraging lately. When I gave that talk, it was, I think, 2011. I mean, Turkey was just one of these bright models in the Muslim world. I could point to Turkey and say, hey, look, in Turkey we have a Muslim-majority society globally embracing liberal democracy. Unfortunately, things have gone sour in Turkey in the past 5 years, let's say. The political party, which ruled Turkey in the past 16 years, looked like a reformist one in the beginning, the party of President Erdogan, but then, in my view, it started to get globally authoritarian. Although this is not exactly Islamic authoritarianism, I think Turkey growingly looks like Russia today more than Saudi Arabia or Iran. So there are problems in Turkey, problems about human rights and freedom of speech. But Turkey is just one episode in a major struggle. And I think we will see this issue, whether Islam is compatible with liberal democracy, coming up in different countries in the decades ahead. Turkey is bad today. Tunisia is a better example. It will go on forward. I mean, Christianity did not embrace liberal democracy, human rights, overnight. I mean, from the time of the Enlightenment, John Locke, it took a few centuries to establish certain values, including free speech and freedom of religion.
Would you say there's a need for a reformation within Islam?
Yes, but I would qualify what the reformation is. I mean, by reformation, if you're using that with a big R, and if you have the Protestant Reformation in mind, I would say no, that's not what we need. Because the Protestant Reformation in Christianity was a rebellion against a central authority, the Catholic Church, which holds monopoly over the interpretation of Christianity, at least in the Western world. Well, we don't have that problem in Islam. We don't have any papacy, we don't have any Catholic hierarchy, we don't have any central authority, so that's not the issue. Actually, some people think that we need some central authority because it's so diverse right now, and radical groups can come and claim legitimacy for their own. But we do need reformation with a small r, in the sense that we need to reinterpret Islamic law, the Sharia, or the interpretations of Sharia, which we call fiqh or jurisprudence. If you have laws which say people should be executed for becoming blasphemers or apostates. Or if you have laws which say women should get less than men in inheritance, or they should have a smaller role in society, they should not be equal before the law. Well, you need some change, and that change is reforming the law, the interpretation of the holy law.
You know, one of the key questions you seem to address in a lot of your writing is the question of, is liberalism in general a good or bad thing for Muslims? Can you, what is your answer to that at this point in your life and career?
Well, I mean, first of all, I should say that I use liberalism in the classical broad sense, in the Enlightenment sense of, you know, that means individual freedom.
Right, right.
Rule of law. And is that a good thing? I mean, do Muslims appreciate liberalism or not? My experience is that Muslim societies appreciate liberalism, or communities appreciate liberalism, when they happen to be a persecuted minority, or a minority which, you know, wants more rights for itself. And, of course, minorities feel the need for more freedom or more openness typically. But when they have the power, when they're the majority, they tend to see liberalism as something that corrupts society, which allows people with deviant ideas, quote-unquote, to speak their mind. But we need people with quote-unquote deviant ideas to speak their mind, because that's how a society moves forward and evolves. So I'm calling on fellow Muslims to be more principled about this. I mean, if you want the right to wear a headscarf in France, in ultra-secular France, which I'm, by the way, very much in favor of. I mean, women should be wearing whatever they want. We should give that right to other women in Saudi Arabia.
I'm sorry, continue.
You're welcome. I mean, if we want Muslim women to make their choices in terms of their dress code, that should be a principle valid both in France and Saudi Arabia. What do I mean by that? Well, in France, you know, there are some, I think, excessive secularists who want to ban the headscarf or the burqa in the public square, and I think that's wrong. Because then we say, Muslims say, well, we need liberal values, we need individual freedom. This woman has made an individual decision. That's a great thing. But then in Saudi Arabia or Iran or in Sudan, women should be able to wear what they want. And in that case, that can be not a headscarf, but that can be another kind of dress. That can be a miniskirt, whatever they want. So I think people understand the value of human rights, liberal values, when they're in the minority, when they don't have power more. But, you know, if that's the only criteria you have, then you will end up being hypocritical. And I think that's what Muslim societies, like other societies, should avoid.
You know, we only have a minute left, but real quick, you know, you seem to talk and explore a lot of issues that are considered third rails. Have you always been, you know, forthright and sort of explorational when it comes to your writings and your work?
Well, yes. I mean, I've been trying to advance these ideas. It brought some trouble to me. I mean, I lost my jobs in Turkey, in the Turkish media, actually, in the past 5 years. I got arrested in Malaysia by the religion police for arguing for religious freedom last year. Luckily, it was not a very long arrest, but my book got banned after that in Malaysia. So there are some challenges, although still compared to some other people who go through very horrible experiences, I consider myself lucky to be alive and to have a platform to speak.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank my guest, Mustafa Akyol, is a senior fellow on Islam and modernity at the Cato Institute, as well as an opinion writer for the New York Times. His lecture, Islam Without Extremes, A Muslim Case for Freedom and Tolerance, is this Thursday, January 24th at 6 p.m. in the Cohen Center here on the FGCU campus. You can find details to it at GulfCoastLive.org. And thanks to our earlier guests during our segment about last night's Florida Water Policy Summit. Our show today was produced by Julie Glenn and myself. We got help in the booth today from Rachel Iacovone. Our social media coordinator is Tara Callaghan. Gulf Coast Live is made possible through the generous support of the Elizabeth B. McGraw Foundation. For now, thanks for listening. I'm Mike Canary. This is WGCU-FM Fort Myers 90.1, WMKO Marco Island 91.7 FM, NPR for Southwest Florida.